Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Andy Murphy. Sean Sherman has been in the kitchen since he was 13 years old. A member of the Oglala Sioux tribe, he worked his way up the ranks to become a professional chef. His is a major voice in the Native American food movement, and along with a team of chefs and partners, he's on a mission to revitalize indigenous food through his companies, The Sioux Chef and North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, or NATIFS. Join us as we talk with Sean Sherman about his work after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. TransCanada is asking South Dakota's Water Management Board for a permit to use Cheyenne River water to build the Keystone XL pipeline. TransCanada has also asked the board to exclude tribes and environmental groups from weighing in on the permitting process. A two-day hearing set for last week has been rescheduled for May 8th to give pipeline opponents more time to gather information and prepare arguments. Victoria Wicks reports.
TransCanada has filed motions with the Water Management Board to bar the Great Plains Tribal Water Alliance from participating in hearings. The company also wants the board to preclude consideration of implied water rights, tribal land and treaty issues, the merits of the pipeline, and the need for an environmental impact statement as requested by the Yankton Sioux Tribe. The first motions hearing was set for April 24th, but the deadline for motions was set for April 23rd. That resulted in 16 filings the day before the hearing. Elizabeth Lone Eagle, who lives on the Cheyenne River with her three children, is participating without an attorney. She says the deadlines were too tight for her to adequately prepare.
We don't have access. We don't have an office full of people. From where we live, I can't even tell you how difficult it is just to get things mailed. You know, we're more than 10 miles from the nearest post office. We're 40 miles from groceries. I think that there needs to be, you know, some kind of consideration given that, no, I'm not an attorney.
After listening to an hour of arguments from representatives of Rosebud and Yankton Tribes and Dakota Rural Action, hearing examiner Rodney Freeman granted an extension. Freeman will consider TransCanada's request to exclude tribes and others on May 8th and 9th and will set dates for future hearings. In its application to use water, TransCanada says it plans to start construction on worker camps in August. A federal injunction remains in place for now. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
U.S. senators on an appropriations subcommittee discussed the 2020 budget for the Indian Health Service Wednesday during a hearing in Washington and asked for an update on reforms following the sentencing of a former IHS doctor for abusing Native children. The more than $5 billion budget proposal includes millions in funding to address hepatitis C, HIV, modernizing electronic health records, staffing, and other needs. There are decreases, including in areas of construction. Montana Senator John Tester raised concerns about low-level funding and possible cuts for urban Indian care. Tester says urban clinics struggle and asked IHS officials to re-examine urban funding, adding it's part of trust and treaty responsibilities. Michael Wiaki, the principal deputy director for the IHS, was the main witness, saying goals for the agency are improving access to care and quality of care. Wiaki says the agency is moving forward on ensuring patients are protected and sexual abuse will not be tolerated. He met with tribes in South Dakota and Montana to discuss steps the IHS is taking to protect patients. After former Dr. Stanley Weber was convicted of sexually abusing children on the Blackfeet Reservation, Weber now faces trial for accusations of sex crimes on Pine Ridge. A number of other issues were discussed during the hearing, including drug abuse and mental health. Minneapolis is kicking off American Indian Month. Native people, their allies, and political leaders celebrate and recognize Native Americans in Minnesota. A parade to the Indian Center starts off events. Workshops, wellness fairs, powwows, films, and other events will be held throughout May. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. What AARP does might surprise you, like supporting the National American Indian Housing Council annual conference taking place May 7th through the 9th in Denver. More at aarp.org/native origins. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Sean Sherman was first on our show back in 2015 when his food truck, Tatanka Truck, just started up. He talked about the food truck scene in Minneapolis and breaking barriers by serving Native food. Well, he grew out of that four-wheeled venue and started the catering company, The Sioux Chef. He and his team of Indigenous chefs travel all over the world now showcasing Indigenous food. Through personal speaking engagements, a successful cookbook, and catering events, Sherman's voice has become one to listen to in the culinary world. He's won 2 James Beard Awards, one for the cookbook The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, and one for leadership in sustainability, food justice, and health. He also won the first American Entrepreneurship Award from the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development last year. And the momentum continues. Sherman has a new restaurant in the works and a new nonprofit called NATIFS, which stands for North American Traditional Indigenous Food System. Sherman is our native in the spotlight for May. If you have a question or comment for him, you're welcome to join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. So welcome back to the show, Sean.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hi. So what do you got going on this week? It sounds like you're gearing up for a pretty exciting week.
Yeah, it's been a big week. We were at the Intertribal Food Summit in the Potawatomi Band of Pokagon in Michigan just this last week with a whole bunch of friends and amazing stuff going on. I then went to D.C. and met up with Ben Jacobs from Takabe and Freddie Bitsoe, the chef at Mitsitam there at the Museum of the Native American, for a talk. And then a quick trip into New York, and I'm back home in Minnesota just for a couple days, and then heading out to Chicago to receive this second James Beard Award on a Sunday night in Chicago.
All right. So what does it mean to you, your second James Beard Award? I mean, first of all, for people who maybe are not familiar with the James Beard Foundation, tell us a little bit about the significance of this award, especially a second one.
You know, it's really kind of the biggest award in the culinary world for people around the U.S. especially. And it's really, you know, highly sought after. And we just felt really lucky that, number one, our book had been nominated last year. And then we were so humbled by actually winning the award for Best American Cookbook out of all the cookbooks that are out there last year. You know, so it's a huge award. And then this year, it was such a big surprise to also be told that I was getting the Leadership Award, because this one's a really special award that just goes to a few people every year. So people in the past, like Michelle Obama, you know, won it a few years ago. And it's such a big one. And we're just really looking forward to seeing what kind of doors continue to open for us as we keep moving forward with our vision of helping to spread awareness and education around Indigenous foods.
You mentioned the Great Lakes Intertribal Food Summit in Michigan. Tell me a little bit more about it. I hear it's like one of the bigger gatherings of Native chefs and people working in this movement.
Yeah, it's been a really great event. So this was the fourth one, and our sous chef team has always been a part of it every year. And this year, we had almost 60 native chefs attend and upwards to 700 people coming through. And it was just really a great 3 days of cooking outside in huge pots. And we were going through all sorts of animals. So we harvested a bison and processed it on site. We did the same thing with an elk. We had about 18 beavers that we cooked up and all sorts of amazing corns and squash and demonstrations. And there's seed keepers and educators and craft people on top of the chefs there. And it was just, you know, a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I can see everybody still unloading like so many pictures, hundreds of pictures from that event. Really look like it was you know, a really awesome thing to come together like that. What were some of the foods that were shared there? What were some of the foods that you made there? I saw lots of campfires. I saw lots of squash, lots of those proteins you mentioned.
Yeah, we had some really great stuff. So we had our friend Chef Joseph from the Coom Kitchen up in Canada was down featuring some of his flavors, and he was just having fun cooking. He smoked a whole elk leg over the fire, and that turned out amazing. You know, my friend and colleague Brian Yahtzee, who's always been a part of our team too and has been pushing more with his own brand, Yahtzee the Chef, the past year, was also doing a lot of stuff. And Josh Nez down in Albuquerque was with us too. Everybody was just doing all sorts of fun dishes, and there was so much stuff because we were doing breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day and just being really creative with all of these things around us.
Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about the sous chef team. I know you don't do this yourself.
Nope. You know, in the very beginning, I did do all of it myself. And then my business partner, Dana, came on and we started growing. And, you know, back in the early days, it was like myself and Brian Yahtzee and Tashia Hart. And we were just running around doing all sorts of stuff. And we had a team working with the Tatanka truck back home. But now we've grown to, you know, we're still small, but we've grown to about 14 people. And we're from, you know, many different nations all over the place. So we've got people from Red Lake Nation and Red Cliff Nation. We've got Northern Cheyenne. And it's just a lot of fun just, you know, internally to have so much diversity and have a team that's just growing and passionate about the work that we're doing.
Yeah. So tell me about the work that you're doing under the sous chef. It seems like there's just a lot of cooking, lots of sharing of indigenous food knowledge. Like what are people actually experiencing when you come into their town?
Well, I do a lot of traveling. So I think, you know, last year I traveled to probably 24 states and 6 different countries. And it's you know, pretty multifaceted. So there's a lot of speaking engagements and do a lot of training and education and classroom work. We do a lot of hands-on demonstrations. We do a lot of pop-up dinners where we're setting things up, you know, anything from really fancy coursed-out dinners with really beautiful plating to really large family-style events where people can just come and enjoy. And we really enjoy getting out to the different tribes and the different regions and working with people and going outside and harvesting whatever might be in season and really making the food taste like exactly where we're standing. You know, so it's a lot of fun, and our team is growing again. So I get to bring my chefs with me on these different events quite a bit. And we're just, you know, looking forward to visiting more and more nations that we haven't been able to get to yet. So.
Right, like making it taste like where we're standing. Maybe that's the definition of Native American food. I know when people are curious about Native American food, they're like, what is it? But what is it? You know, they keep asking, like, what is it? Like, they're expecting, like, one answer. Give us the definition of Native American food.
Well, from our perspective, you know, we tried to really identify what is Native American food, what makes up an indigenous food system. So we look at if the region had agriculture, what kind of seeds are still around that, you know, might still be alive. And so we look for really beautiful seeds of different kinds of corns, of course, different kinds of beans and squash and sunflower and chilies and amaranths and things like that. But we also look at the wild foods around us. So the knowledge of the plants is a really huge one for indigenous peoples because our ancestors, you know, had the blueprint to live sustainably utilizing just the plants and animals of their regions. And that's what the true flavors really are. So we just look at all of these plants. So not using a term like weed, which just means you don't know what it is, but taking the time to learn what these plants are good for. You know, is it food? Is it medicine? Can you craft with it? And usually the answer is you can do all three of those with everything. So just trying to mimic our ancestors of being extremely resourceful and knowledgeable about all the life around us and being a part of the ecosystem. And we look at food preservation techniques, and we look at where people were gathering salts and fats and sugars and things like that. And we just, you know, for us, we're not trying to do a timepiece and cook like it's, you know, a couple hundred years ago or 400 years ago. We're just trying to absorb as much knowledge from our ancestors as possible and apply it to now and evolve the food systems into something for this modern day, but staying true to it. So we've cut out colonial ingredients like dairy, wheat flour, processed cane sugar, and even beef, pork, and chicken, just to prove a point on alternative protein sources around us.
Okay. All right. And you mentioned that you travel all over the world and you're showcasing our food all over the world. What kind of interest do people overseas have in native food? What are they learning, really?
I think people are really interested overseas because, you know, when they come to America or Canada, you know, they really want to taste something that's unique to the region. And we have so many restaurants that are just kind of, you know, European-influenced food bases all over the place, you know. And it's really interesting for them to think about this Native American food knowledge that's out there. And it's really important for us to understand, like, how diverse we are, obviously. Like, as Indigenous peoples, we understand how diverse we are. But a lot of people on the outside don't usually see that. So it's fun to explain to them that, you know, there's still 573 tribes in the U.S. and 622 in Canada, and, you know, a fifth of Mexico still speaks Indigenous languages. So when we're looking at the immense diversity of Indigenous peoples, we start to see regions so much better, and it really defines North American regions by, you know, understanding the Indigenous cultures that lived throughout these areas. I mean, there's just so much food to explore, especially as chefs. So I think people get really excited, and food is something that everybody understands because it's that one thing that we all have in common as human beings is to eat, and we love good food. So it's a great way to understand somebody else's culture, and it's a great way to share culture.
Yeah, yeah. Understanding somebody's culture through a plate of food, through maybe just a couple of little samples here and there. So we are talking to Sean Sherman today. He's with the Sous Chef, and we are talking about food. If you have questions or comments about food, Indigenous food particularly, you can join our conversation too by calling 1-800-996-2848. Sean Sherman's been all over the country. Maybe you've even visited him or attended one of his events. How did tasting what he has to serve maybe affect you? What would you like to share about that? Join us again at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're talking to Sean Sherman. We'll be back after this break.
The U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights is investigating the Wolf Point School District in Montana. The department is looking into complaints filed 2 years ago by the Fort Peck, Assiniboine Sioux tribes. The complaint alleges unequal treatment, bullying, and harsh punishment at the hands of school staff and administrators. We'll talk with parents and community members about it on the next Native America Calling.
How me talk ye picky? Zania wapi nitkawachi onichink telo. Zania wapi nitkawachi iwashte niukini okihielo. Lily some wasoli ank telo, Medicaid.gov, Medicare.gov nish, la kozania wa oki kichiwogalakayo. Le wotchaniki, Medicare na Medicaid otieta hielo. Ho, hechetuelo.
Yeah.
You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy. Sean Sherman is our May Native in the Spotlight. He's an award-winning chef, entrepreneur, and Indigenous foods advocate. His cookbook, The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, won a James Beard Award last year. He also just won a James Beard Leadership Award for his work advocating for Indigenous foods. If you like discussions about Indigenous food, you can also listen to my podcast, Toasted Sister. Just search for Toasted Sister on your favorite podcast app. You can find a couple of interviews with Sean Sherman and more than 50 other Native chefs and farmers, including the ones he just mentioned in the first half of the show, in the archive at ToastedSisterPodcast.com. If you have questions today, though, about Sean Sherman, join us by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We do have a caller on the line, Melvin from Santee, Nebraska. Hi, Melvin.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to ask the sous chef about, you know, we come from Minnesota originally, the upper Midwest, and wild rice was a very important part of our diet, and we've tried to reintroduce rice to our diet, and it was really something because they're so used to white rice, and showing people how to prepare it and all that. But the other thing is our traditional food, one was fish, you know, preparing different types of fish, you know, like now up in Wisconsin and Minnesota, they are spearing now, you know, and harvesting game and fish. See, the season when they are ripe for spearing, what is the best fish right now here for the Dakotas and Minnesota to prepare at this time of season?
All right. All right. Well, thank you, Melvin, for giving us a call. Sean, what kinds of fishes are you cooking? Maybe you can answer this question. What are some of the healthier fishes from that Great Lakes area?
Well, we're lucky in Minnesota because the Red Lake Nation in the north, they're way up there, and they have a beautiful lake and a beautiful reservation, and they have the Red Lake fisheries. So we've been utilizing them for the past few years because we try and purchase from, you know, native food producers as much as possible, and we're able to get a lot of amazing Minnesota walleye and whitefish and northerns. And there's, you know, we're also lucky because we have Lake Superior, so there's a lot of wonderful lake trout and things that come out of there. But we definitely use a lot of fish, and we definitely use a lot of wild rice from these beautiful lakes around us. And, you know, people can order wild rice from, like, the White Earth Reservation and Met Lake Reservation and get the really true wild rice, not the black wild rice that comes out of California that's grown in paddies, but the true wild rice where people are still hand-harvesting in canoes on the reservation. And it's so wonderful, you know, to try the real stuff.
Yeah, and Melvin mentioned, you know, making that switch from white rice to wild rice. I mean, it seems like, you know, a lot of the work that you guys are doing in this whole movement across the country, Native chefs and farmers and people working in this food sovereignty movement, they're working to, you know, introduce this traditional way of eating to maybe change diets and change life ways. I mean, is this what's going on? And what are some of the maybe barriers you're up against trying to get a lot of us in the Native community to think about food differently, to eat a little differently?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to understand and to start to implement Indigenous diets, and especially on tribal communities that might be suffering from a lot of foodborne illnesses. You know, so if there's a lot of type 2 diabetes or obesity or heart disease in the communities, we can really start to push backwards on that and work towards a healthier lifestyle by just eating traditional foods, you know. So making all of our wild foods and domesticated foods a part of our diet, and really exploring like how much amazing recipes that we can come up with today utilizing these pieces, you know. So we try to showcase that in the cookbook a little bit to give people an idea of how to cook with just Indigenous ingredients. And, you know, really celebrating the true flavors of, you know, what is Native America.
Yeah, and I know you've mentioned in some press that, you know, you don't bill this as like healthy, you know, this new diet or anything like that. And I know this article came out the other month about Zach Johnston, who's a writer with UpRocks, lost 100 pounds by eating indigenous foods. Talk to me a little bit about like the natural health aspect of native food.
So if you're looking at indigenous foods on the nutritional scale, you know, there's a lot of amazing plant diversity that's involved because our indigenous ancestors were collecting and utilizing all of these wonderful plants around us. And, you know, there's hundreds of varieties of plants that could be within our diets. And just looking around with just the wild foods. And so the food itself is, you know, it's low glycemic. So it means it doesn't have a lot of sugars like we find today. You know, our native corns are completely different. And the process of mixmalizing corn or turning it into hominy or pozole, you know, is such an important process that our ancestors utilized that made the corn even healthier for us. And, you know, it's just there's just so much diversity out there. Because when you look at a typical, you know, diet, especially with the old food pyramid kind of model, you know, people are eating very few plants. You know, they could probably count up to maybe 20-some plants, and that's it. Before our indigenous ancestors, they were eating hundreds of them, you know, and that's so healthy for you. So having a diet that's low glycemic, with lots of good fats between the seeds and nuts and the wild animals, low in salt, low in sugar in general, and just cutting out those three pieces of dairy, wheat flour, and cane sugar could be good for anybody, you know.
Yeah. And what is your absolute favorite ingredient to use?
It's a tough question because we cook so seasonally and we cook so regionally because we just try to make food taste like where we are, you know. So, you know, we can have things like walleye and wild rice and sunchokes and rose hips and tamarack and cedar, and make a dish out of all those flavors. And we can literally stand on one lake in Minnesota and like see all those pieces around us. And you can do that in basically any region you are, you know, whether you're in the Pacific Northwest or the Northeast or the Southwest or deep in Mexico or way up in northern Canada or out in Alaska. Like, it's just really looking at how indigenous peoples were utilizing what were those pantry items, what were people storing away, and how can we make that a part of our diet again today?
Right. And you've mentioned Mexico, and that seems like it's a very special place for you. Tell me about Mexico and what you found there.
Well, Mexico is amazingly diverse, and there's a lot of indigenous speakers and a lot of indigenous food waste still alive down there because the history of how Mexico treated indigenous peoples, you know, isn't pleasant, but it's much different than, say, the U.S. or Canada, where they, you know, really pushed hard for assimilation and efforts that was really damaging to our knowledge bases around our indigenous foods and our indigenous traditions. But for Mexico, a lot of people are still out there today practicing what they've always been doing. So growing these amazing varietals of corn, you know, nixtamalizing them there, you know, doing everything over fire, grinding things with rocks. And it's just it's so cool. And there's so much amazing indigenous diversity throughout Mexico and, you know, and south of there, of course, deep into South America. And we just really believe of understanding these indigenous food systems. So for us, we look at North America as a whole, from Mexico all the way up through Alaska. And, you know, we look at the amazing agriculture that was born out of Mexico and shot, you know, deep up into North America, you know, all the way up into parts of what is North Dakota, you know, along the Mississippi, Missouri River valleys and all along the eastern seaboard up into parts of Canada. And there's just like so much to explore when it comes to native foods. And we really see indigenous food knowledge on a global scale because we have friends and families and partners from all over the world. So it doesn't matter if you're in Africa or India or Southeast Asia or Hawaii, South America, New Zealand. We all share this history of, you know, the destruction through colonization and capitalization of our indigenous foodways, but so much valuable indigenous knowledge on a global scale. And we're just doing our best to understand it on the lands that we're currently standing on today.
Right. And on Friday on Native America Calling, we are talking about Cinco de Mayo, and we'll be kind of continuing this kind of conversation about indigenous Mexicans and their contribution to Mexican food all over the world. And that's on Friday. And in the past, a couple of months ago, we did talk about corn on Native America Calling and how that originated from Mexico and through the trade routes came all over North America. So you are listening, of course, to Native America Calling. If you want to join the conversation with Sean Sherman, you have a question or comment or kudos for him, just dial 1-800-996-2848. And we're also on Twitter. Our handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Sean, you know, last year and a couple years even before that too, your team supported the horse riders on the Dakota 38 plus 2 Memorial Run. What was your decision behind that? Why is it important for you to support that movement there?
Well, we just really believe in the important story that ride tells, and you know, doing our part of just having a really beautiful indigenous meal for the riders when they get to a certain point in South Dakota. So we've been lucky to partner with some people out there in South Dakota who would bring us in so we can have a place to feed the riders and show up in Mankato by the time the riders get there to be a part of that ceremony and have some, you know, some hot indigenous tea ready for them too. And, you know, we just love being a part of that. And it's an amazing sight to see those riders come through. And, you know, that time of year, the weather can be so cold too. So it's a really beautiful event.
Right. And, you know, those conflicts, those wars, Indian wars back then and colonization really had, you know, a detrimental effect on indigenous food here and pretty much all over the world. How do you see this movement sort of addressing that kind of healing? And I also want to ask you, where do you think this movement is going to go in the future?
Well, there has to be a lot of healing in many different areas, you know, so we're still having small battles like in, you know, in Minnesota, changing some of the names to some of the lakes and places to the original Dakota names. And we're still battling, you know, just trying to get some of that stuff done. But there's so much history here that's just not really talked about, you know, and particularly because we're in Minnesota, we talk about, you know, the Dakota conflict and, you know, when the Dakota people tried to fight against the Minnesota government and the U.S. government to preserve their ways and eventually lost, and, you know, leading to the concentration camp in Fort Snelling and to the hangings in Mankato. It's just a story that's not really well told. And, you know, part of that was, you know, during that time period, the U.S. Congress passed the Dakota Expulsion Act in 1863, making it illegal to be a Dakota person in their homeland of Minnesota. And the crazy thing is that law had never actually been revoked. So today it's still illegal in the books to be a Dakota person in Minnesota.
That's pretty interesting. Let's go to a caller. We have James on the line from Bozeman, Montana, listening online. James, what do you have to say?
Hey, guys. Thanks for answering my question. I live here in Bozeman, and I went to a dinner that you put on, I think it was last year, and it was wonderful. I learned a lot, delicious. And I was wondering if you could recommend a resource, maybe, you know, in Montana or around Montana, that I can learn about the local foods here. Because I know that there's an abundance of, you know, available foods, but I just kind of at a standstill of how to learn about it. So I was hoping you could help me out.
All right. Thanks, James, for giving us a call. Sean, you want to help James out?
Yeah. And we're going to be back out in Montana this summer. So we're going to head out there towards the end of June and be there at the beginning of July. And we'll be back in Bozeman, actually, too. So just check us out on our socials and watch for that. But, you know, the university in Bozeman did a really great job of being able to make indigenous foods available to their students at the university. So they actually created a small cafeteria piece that was focused on just the indigenous foods and trying to really utilize the foods of that region. So when we're looking at, you know, the native foods, you know, we try to be a resource for people to help research so they can come to our website. We put some links up for people to go to find some the people that we like to utilize. And, of course, there's many ideas in the cookbook. So, but we encourage people to just reach out to us because we're happy to help with any of those kind of questions and hopefully push them in the right direction.
Right. And I guess the other part of my question earlier was, where do you see this movement going in the future? Say, you know, 100 years from now, 200 years from now?
Well, we really believe that there is so much amazing knowledge, indigenous knowledge on the worldwide scale, like we said, and we're just starting to really tap into it because, you know, again, for indigenous peoples, for the knowledge that they can carry of being real true stewards of our landscape and really protecting our natural resources so much better than obviously, you know, capitalization and colonialization has done by destroying so many resources. But, you know, just helping to preserve plant diversity and biodiversity and really understanding ecosystems so much better and you know, just having so much health go through our food and, you know, putting more plants into our diet and looking at a healthier way of eating that really mimics how our ancestors were eating and making that a part of the future. And really the work that we do, especially with our nonprofit, is trying to set this up so these next generations coming up will know exactly what their indigenous foods are growing up and have a platform where they can continue to grow with it. Because we envision a world where we would see you know, immensely diverse indigenous restaurants and places to come and try different cultures all across North America. And we're, you know, working really hard to make that happen during our lifetime. And we're hoping that the next generations can take it and run with it and do something even more amazing.
Right. I mean, you mentioned native restaurants, and today there aren't that many native restaurants. And we'll pick up this part of the conversation after this break that we're going to go to in just a bit here. But today we're talking to Sean Sherman. He's with the Sioux Chef. He also has a new nonprofit called Natives, which is North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems. And he's here with us talking about indigenous food and what this native food movement is all about. I mean, this native food movement is pretty exciting. It's, you know, lots of indigenous people all across Native America really paying more attention to indigenous foods and making those efforts to revitalize, preserve, and protect native foods wherever they're at and showcasing Native American foods, like getting it out there and really answering those questions for people. What is Native American food? Well, it's really, really tasty and healthy food that Native chefs all over the country are showcasing. And of course, Sean Sherman is one of those big names in Native food here. He is our May Native in the Spotlight. You have a question for him, a comment, join us at by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE.
From northern Minnesota, Red Lake Nation Foods is pleased to support this show and share the bounty of the harvests, wild rice products, and wild fruit jams, jellies, and syrups produced by American Indians and available at redlakenationfoods.com. Support by PrairieEdge.com, proud to provide traditional and contemporary American Indian craft supplies from feathers, furs, and hides to conchos, fringe, shells, and beads in Rapid City or online at PrairieEdge.com. Wopila.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This is Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy. We've got Chef Sean Sherman with us on the line. He's our May Native in the Spotlight. He's the founder and CEO of the Sioux Chef Catering Company and founder of Natives, which is North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, which is a budding nonprofit focused on culinary education and business development. We're talking about food. You can join our conversation. Tell us about some of the indigenous foods you're incorporating in your cooking. We are at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to a caller. We got Carolyn in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Hey, Carolyn.
Hey, thank you so much. I love this program. I'm a white person. I'm a nutritionist. I've done personal chefing and pop-ups, and I'm really familiar with Weston Price and a bunch of the older foodways that are non-native. I love the idea of incorporating all the wild greens. I love that emphasis on it. I'd love to go to that amazing event, whatever that is, in Michigan and cook up a storm with people, and I will definitely get the book. And thank you so much, Sean, for all you're doing for food awareness. And as a nutritionist, I can say that a grass-fed and naturally grazing animals eating what they're supposed to also significantly changes the fatty content, which is so important. And the Native American communities having so much diabetes and, you know, really moving in the direction of that is just so right. And thank you so much. And I can't wait to get the book, and I'll sign off so somebody else can talk. But thank you again. And thank you, Native American Calling. Bye.
All right. Thank you so much, Carolyn, for giving us a call. Hey, Sean, do you have any words for Carolyn?
Yeah, well, just thanks a lot, you know, and please, you know, again, check out our website, and I hope you enjoy the cookbook.
All right. So she's talking about nutrition, you know, which is in that medical field there. You know, when we are sick, we go to the hospital, we go to a nutritionist. That's another way of thinking about food, is in that sort of medical health aspect. I mean, do those two kind of butt heads, you know, the nutritional field, the medical field, and then like native traditional, in, you know, field here that you are in?
Most definitely. I mean, because, you know, our food is our medicine, you know, so, you know, the outdoors is our, it's our shopping area, it's our pharmacy, you know, it's all together, and people ate for health, you know, and there's so much beautiful health knowledge that's still alive out there through the plants. And again, like having that immense plant diversity, and there's so many really smart people out there that are working on indigenous medicines on top of the indigenous food movement that's happening too, and it's all tied together. And again, like these foods can really heal us and can really bring us a better future.
All right. And then there's like the business side of all of this. And you mentioned restaurants. Sean, how come there's not Native restaurants all over the place?
Well, part of it is the history of the U.S. and indigenous peoples and, you know, the reservation systems and the boarding school systems and the erasure of knowledge and the assimilation efforts by the U.S. government throughout the U.S. and Canada. So the big part is we just went through an immense time period of trauma, you know, and I really feel like the 1900s was still just an entire century of oppression towards Native peoples. And we're just getting to this point where we can start to really realize and grow with the knowledge of our ancestors and try to understand and re-identify and revitalize a lot of those knowledges and apply it. But we're in, it's really important that we have some places that we can teach indigenous education, which is basically, you know, the knowledge of our ancestors, which was thousands of years of generational knowledge being handed down that we as indigenous peoples should have received if it weren't for those efforts of the U.S. government to try to erase a lot of this knowledge. And we're doing everything we can to start to put together this education so it can be accessible to people. And that's really the heart of what our nonprofit is to becoming that help to become a resource for indigenous education, especially around foodways.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about how that would work. Say if somebody came to Natus and was like, can you please help me start a Native restaurant or help me with my dream here to serve my own community with the Native foods that they maybe don't even remember anymore?
Yeah, and our vision is that we're starting here in Minnesota, because that's where we're based. We're in Minneapolis, and we're opening up a nonprofit restaurant as part of our nonprofit. The restaurant will be called Indigenous Food Lab. An Indigenous Food Lab is a 501c3 restaurant where people can come and try the food, but it's designed to be a place where people can actually work alongside us in the restaurant and learn how to play and work with these particular Indigenous foods and cooking techniques and recipes. And also we are planning to have an educational kitchen so we can teach about Indigenous education and an Indigenous curriculum around food, so we can teach about, you know, seed saving and farming techniques and Native agriculture and wild foods and ethnobotany, plant identification, medicinal purposes, cooking techniques and food preservation techniques, and all of this kind of stuff. And we just really want to create a center for people to come and learn. And our goal is to work with the tribes nearby us to help them to develop something for their own community and utilize ourselves as a training and support an educational center, so we can constantly train their workers of how to do that. So we really want to see the creation of at least one healthy Indigenous food outlet for every community that's designed particular to each tribe, their language, their land, their history, their people, and their foods and flavors. And our final goal with Indigenous Food Lab is to mimic that and open it up everywhere we can. So we're hoping to put Indigenous food labs in cities like Seattle, Denver, Albuquerque, Boston, Chicago, New York, San Francisco, basically anywhere, and eventually even throughout Canada, Alaska, and down in Mexico. And each one of those food labs would do the same work, where it becomes a regional pinpoint to work with the tribes around them to help develop those regional foods. And then we can start to see that vision of having these Indigenous food businesses opened up all across. And, you know, wouldn't it be amazing to be able to drive across North America in any direction and stop at all of these diverse Indigenous food places and really see all this cool culture and food and health that's out there everywhere?
Right, the Native American food tour across the country. I like the sound of that in Albuquerque. So let's go to our caller, Melissa, in Pittsville, Massachusetts. Hey, Melissa.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Hi, Sean, Chef Sean.
Hi.
This is Melissa. I had the great opportunity to attend the Food Sovereignty Summit in Michigan this past week. And I just have to say it's truly a life experience, a life-changing experience for anyone who has the opportunity to do it. And thank you for doing this work. You know, it's been a great thing for me personally. My question is, what kind of support does Native, the organization, need to be able to continue doing this great work that you're putting out in the Indigenous communities?
And the need for financial support as we're getting ready to grow this huge vision outwards. And we've been working really hard to raise the necessary funds, because these can be really expensive, especially to open up restaurants in cities. But they're really vital, and we really feel like we have such a solid plan moving forward, and we're getting a lot of work. But, you know, asking people to not only share the work that we're doing and talk about it with other people, and, you know, support us financially if it's a thing that they can do. And we can, you know, just appreciate it, because we really want to get out there in cities everywhere we can, and continue to build our network and continue to build the people working with us, too.
All right. So, Sean, you know, being a chef, you really can't separate cooking and then running a business. How do you sort of balance the two? Seems like you're so busy traveling all over the country and all over the world. How do you balance, you know, the food aspect, cooking, being in the kitchen, with also being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I mean, and being a small business owner is tough, and, you know, food businesses can be really difficult, too. And that's why we've, you know, tried to create a situation where we can help people and support people as they grow this, and help entire communities do this, too. So it is tough, and it's taken a lot of learning, and, you know, we've been at it. I've opened up the Sous Chef in 2014, so it's been a few years, and it feels like we have a long ways to go, but looking backwards, we've also accomplished quite a bit in that time frame. And we're excited to share our experiences to help other people to develop in any way we can.
Yeah. And personally, what do you do to sort of wind down and get your head out of that space?
Well, you know, I have a son at home, and we like to relax and just hang out, and I just like to have some downtime. And, you know, I am lucky that my job takes me around to many different places, but it's also so great just to be able to connect with the nature of wherever we might be, and just to be able to be outside and walk around and see all these different plants and learn so many new plants from all these different regions. And, you know, just being outside like that is such a centering part of the work, and it really helps out, you know. And it doesn't hurt that this is our passion, too, and we're, you know, really happy to keep moving forward with it, of course.
Right. So you're kind of the face of native food. I mean, you have this huge voice. You've been in all kinds of press and videos and, you know, short documentaries and stuff like that. And you've won these awards. You've been on Native America Calling a handful of times. Is there maybe a downside to this kind of notoriety?
Well, really, the best part of the work that we do is really trying to push it out of the ego, because we knew walking into this work that it wasn't about us personally. So this work isn't about me as a chef particularly. You know, we're just really trying to utilize that platform to have a larger voice, to be able to raise more awareness and to share with more people. So we feel really lucky that we do get the attention that we get, but we're really trying to use that platform for good to help. You know, to help really share again. So, and it's great because most culinary projects you see are they're very ego driven. It's about the chef and their vision and things like that. And there's a little bit of that, but we, you know, the work again isn't about me, and it never will be. And this work will always be bigger than myself. So, you know, I just really try to stay humble through it, and really just, you know, feel lucky that we have the attention to share.
Right. All right. So today we're talking to Sean Sherman of the Sous Chef and NATIFS. That's North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems. Sean, give us a little bit of history about yourself. You shot up the ranks in the kitchen. How did you really start? Like when you were 13 years old, how did you start in the kitchen?
Well, my mom moved my sister and I off of Pine Ridge, and we moved to a small town in South Dakota called Spearfish in the Black Hills. And like a lot of families coming out of Pine Ridge, we didn't have a ton of money, so I just started working right away. And kitchens were something that I was able to find a job with pretty quickly. So, you know, I just, you know, really started from the ground up, and I pretty much have worn every single hat in the restaurant business, you know. And it's just really important to put that hard work in. And, you know, I didn't really think I was going to be a chef back in those young days. It was just a job that was bringing me money, and I was always around food, so that was a plus. And once I became a chef and I started to find what I was, you know, learning my skills and things like that, but it really wasn't until I realized that absolute absence of indigenous culture in the culinary world everywhere, you know, because you have giant cities all over the place, like New York, Chicago, LA, with zero Native American restaurants, and that's pretty insane. So it just, you know, pushed me to find out why, and it just pushed me onto this path that I'm on now.
All right. And you are all over the world, of course, talking to youth, too. What role do youth have to play in this, and what's your advice to young people who are interested in food?
I think the next generations are really becoming a lot more aware of what people are, what they're putting into their body, and just, you know, helping to create food access is going to be really important, and healthy food access is really where it's at, and especially with the indigenous layer, because the indigenous foods are even more healthy. So we just really want people, and the kids especially, to, you know, see how amazing it is to grow out a lot of this amazing indigenous seeds that our ancestors have been able to keep, so they're still alive for us today. And just that knowledge of learning the plants outside, you know, we should be teaching our kids this plant knowledge because it's so important, you know. And there's a lot of work to do, obviously. And we're going to continue to, you know, help be a resource for indigenous education, but you know, we just love working with the kids and seeing how excited they get when they're trying some of these amazing foods.
Mm-hmm. What are some things that are in your fridge right now?
Well, it's ramp season right now, so there's wild onions and leeks all over the place, and fiddlehead ferns are popping up in the forest right now. Wild gingers all over the forest floor up here. Asparagus is popping up, and there's just all sorts of, you know, spring is just now hitting us where we are right now. It's still actually really chilly today. It's like 40 degrees around Minnesota, so, but spring is coming, and we're all ready for it.
Yeah. Well, in native food, there are all kinds of ways you can think about it in entrepreneurship, in, you know, culture. You can link to language revitalization. What topic in food would you like people to start thinking about or maybe start writing about in the media?
Well, we just want to showcase, like, how important an indigenous food system is and how involved it is. It's not just about cooking. It's about how communities were able to survive utilizing just these indigenous foods, especially the plants around us. And we just want, you know, to hopefully, you know, inspire people to find a passion somewhere in the indigenous food system, because we need more growers and more seed keepers and more wild food specialists and more entrepreneurs and food producers making all sorts of stuff. And there's so much opportunity for indigenous peoples to celebrate the foods and practices and traditions of their past and apply it to now and grow it into something amazing for everybody to share.
All right. So we've reached the end of the hour. Thank you so much, Sean, for joining us today and helping us celebrate Native food today on Native America Calling. So tune in tomorrow for a discussion about civil rights complaints against a Montana school district on the Fort Peck Reservation. I'm Andy Murphy, associate producer at Native America Calling. I'm also the host for the Toasted Sister podcast. It's all about Native American food. If you want to hear more about that topic, go to ToastedSisterPodcast.com and see what's there. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support by the University of New Mexico, the state's flagship research university. UNM is a welcoming and inclusive community of learners, providing enriching programs and services that support our Native American students. The University of New Mexico is growing the number of Native American and Indigenous faculty across campus. UNM is a destination university for Native and Indigenous undergraduate, graduate, and professional students. More at unm.edu.
How me talk ye picky? Zania wapi nitkawachi onichink de lo. Zania wapi nitkawachi iwashte niukini okihielo. Lily somewa solyank de lo. Medicaid.gov, Medicare.gov nish. La ko zania wa oki kichiwogalakayo. Le wot haniki, Medicare na Medicaid otieta hielo. Ho, hechetuelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.